Every time you train an AI agent to fix bugs in real software, it leaves behind something like a diary. The agent gets dropped into an actual code repository, and it starts poking around, searching files, reading functions, making an edit, running the test suite, watching it fail, trying again. Every one of those steps gets recorded. The field calls that record a trace. And here's the part that should bug you. Almost every training pipeline reads that diary for exactly one thing. Did the tests pass at the end, yes or no? And then throws the entire thing away.
And yes or no is a single bit. You've got a record that might span dozens of tool calls. The agent searched here, misread this function, applied a fix that broke something else, and you're compressing all of it down to one bit and deleting the rest. It's like a teacher grading a final exam by checking only the last answer and then shredding the student's work.
That diary is arguably the single most accurate map you'll ever get of where this specific agent is weak right now. And the paper we're getting into took that one observation and built an entire training system around it. This paper went up on Archive on June 5th, 2026, and we're recording 4 days later. Quick ground rules before we dig in. This episode is AI generated. The script was written by Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8, and the two voices you're hearing, I'm Juniper and that's Eric, are both AI voices from 11 Labs. The show itself isn't affiliated with Anthropic or with 11 Labs. The paper is called Socratic SWE, Self-Evolving Coding Agents via Trace-Derived Agent Skills. And the reason that discarded diary matters comes down to a bottleneck that's been quietly throttling this whole field.
The bottleneck being data, but a very specific kind. Reinforcement learning for coding agents is hungry. To keep an agent improving, you need a steady supply of fresh problems, a real repository, a real bug, and a real test suite that can verify the fix. And those are expensive. You can't just scrape them off the internet. So the workaround has been synthetic bugs. Automatically mutate some code, inject a defect, generate a fake problem. The trouble is, those generators follow fixed rules that know nothing about the agent you're training. They'll happily hand your agent its thousandth off by one error when the thing it actually struggles with is, say, preserving inheritance behavior in some authentication library.
And as the agent gets better, more and more of that static pool becomes too easy to teach it anything. You're spending compute drilling problems the model already aces. Learning just stalls out. So here's the move. Instead of generating practice problems from fixed rules that ignore the agent, you mine the agent's own traces, its diaries, for the recurring ways it screws up. You turn those into a library of named weaknesses, and then you manufacture exactly the practice problems that target those weaknesses. The curriculum chases the model's own moving weak spots.
Okay, but a library of named weaknesses is abstract. What does one of these things actually look like? Because I can imagine a version of this that's just vague hand-waving. The agent is bad at edge cases, which would be completely useless.
Fair. And the paper has the perfect concrete example. So let me read you a trimmed version. There's a repository called OAuthLib. It handles OAuth, the protocol that lets you log into one site using your account from another. The system watched its agent attempt bugs in that repo over and over, and distilled a skill card for it. And the card is specific in a way that's almost funny. It says, the agent correctly finds the scope conversion helper, but then applies generic filtering that violates the library's actual contract. It says, the agent keeps swapping two variables in the device login endpoint, two things named almost identically, one's the verification address, and one's the complete version of it. It says, the agent confuses a nonce and a timestamp because both look like strings but mean completely different things. That's a skill. It's not be better at OAuth. It's a written diagnosis of the exact, repeated mistakes, plus a playbook of bugs to drill the agent on next.
So it's the difference between two tutors. One just writes a grade on each problem and moves on. The other keeps a notebook. This kid keeps confusing these two concepts, finds the bug fine but then botches the fix, and uses the notebook to design tomorrow's session. Everyone else in this space is the grade-only tutor. This paper is the one with the notebook.
That's exactly it, Eric. And the subtle pivot, the thing that's easy to miss, is that everyone already uses the trace. They read it to compute the pass-fail score. They just throw away everything except the score. This paper treats the trace as a reusable lesson, not a disposable receipt. So the whole thing runs as a loop, and one shared model wears two hats. As the solver, it attempts the bug fix tasks and produces the traces. A separate distillation model reads those traces, successes and failures both, and pulls out the recurring patterns as skill cards. Then the same model puts on its other hat, the generator. It takes a real repository plus one of those skills and injects a realistic bug designed to exercise that weakness. That's a brand new practice problem.
And there's a wall between the two hats, right? The solver sees the task and the feedback from running tests, but it never sees the reference solution or what's inside the verifier. So even though it's the same weights generating and solving, the solving half can't peek at the answer key.
Same brain, but the solver's blindfolded to the answer. Now, before any generated problem gets used, it has to clear a security line. Four checkpoints in order, cheapest first. Is the task even well formed? Does it parse? Does it reference files and functions that actually exist in the repo? Does the test harness run cleanly and stably, no flaky results? And finally, does the test actually distinguish a broken version from a fixed one? And does a valid fix even exist? Flunk any gate, you're dropped. And the cheap checks go first, so junk fails fast before you waste a sandbox run on it.
That's all just establishing the problem is valid, though. Valid isn't the same as useful.
And that distinction is the whole ball game. Here's the trap the authors are worried about. A generated problem can be perfectly well formed, perfectly solvable, run perfectly in the sandbox, and still teach the agent absolutely nothing worth learning. So how do you tell in advance whether a problem is worth the agent's time? The field's usual answer is difficulty. Pick the hard problems, or the ones right at the edge of what the model can do. The authors think that's wrong, and they have a clean replacement. Think about cramming for a specific exam. You've got an infinite supply of flashcards you could make. Before you add a card to your deck, you ask one question. If I drill this, does it move me toward acing this particular exam? You keep the cards that pull you toward the test, and you toss the ones that are hard but irrelevant, the obscure trivia that'll never show up. Usefulness isn't, how hard is this card? It's, does drilling it pull me in the direction of the goal I actually care about?
And to make that concrete in the actual training, they need a way to measure pulls me toward the goal. That's the gradient piece. And Juniper, I think this is where it's worth slowing down, because gradient is the one word that scares people off.
So forget the calculus. Here's all you need. When you train a model on a task, the training works out a direction to nudge the model's millions of internal dials. Turn these this way, those that way, to get better at this. That direction is the gradient. Different tasks point you in different directions, and you can compare two directions. Do they point roughly the same way, off at an angle, or flat out opposite? So the authors keep a small, trusted set of held out problems, call it the practice exam, that the model never trains on. They work out the direction that getting better on that exam would push the model. Then, for each candidate practice problem, they work out the direction training on it would push the model. And they keep the problems whose direction lines up with the exam's direction. That's the flashcard test, made literal.
And the tool for do these point the same way is cosine similarity, a number that's 1 if two arrows point the same direction, 0 if they're perpendicular, minus 1 if they're opposite. The crucial thing is it ignores how long the arrows are.
Which matters more than it sounds. Why throw away the length? Why not just measure the raw overlap?
Because a sprawling, complicated task, a huge multi-file patch, produces a big nudge no matter what. If you measured raw overlap, you'd be biased toward the biggest, messiest tasks, just because they're big, whether or not they're useful. Cosine drops the size and keeps only the direction, so you're comparing pure which way, not how much.
And that's the heart of the paper, in one line. Stop asking how hard a problem is, and start asking, directly, measurably, whether practicing it moves you toward the real goal.
So, does it work? The headline number. Starting from zero pre-existing coding tasks, just some seed repositories, after three rounds of this loop, the agent hits just over 50% on SWE Bench Verified. That's the human-vetted benchmark of real GitHub issues. 500 of them, where you only score if the repo's own tests pass. Just over 50% is up nearly 8 points from where the base agent started, and about 3.5 points above the strongest competing method.
And 50 is a bit of a psychological line on that benchmark. For a while, just getting an agent to resolve half of those issues was the thing everyone was chasing.
But honestly, the single number isn't the interesting part. The shape over time is. Watch what happens across the three rounds. The gains accelerate. Round 1, about 3.5 points. Round 2, almost 6. Round 3, nearly 8. It's speeding up. Now, compare that to the other self-evolving methods. The existing self-play crowd, where one copy of the model proposes problems and another solves them. Almost all of them do the opposite. They peak at round 1 or 2 and then regress. One of them, by round 3, actually ends up worse than the base agent it started from. It made the agent slightly dumber.
That's the part that's genuinely striking. If you told me a self-improvement loop went backwards, I'd assume it was a bug. But it's not. It's the curriculum eating itself. If you keep generating problems without aiming them, you drift. You burn rounds on stuff that doesn't transfer, and the agent's general competence erodes. The targeting is what keeps this one pointed uphill.
There's another result I didn't expect, and it cuts against the obvious objection. You'd think the magic is in the fancy model doing the skill extraction, the thing reading the traces and writing those diagnosis cards. So they tested it. They swapped the extractor for a much smaller model, doing the extraction on itself. It dropped barely half a point. They swapped in a big frontier model instead. It gained barely half a point.
So the win isn't coming from a clever distiller writing beautiful prose. It's coming from the framework. The skills are mined from real traces and validated by actually running tests.
Their line is basically, as long as the skills come from real behavior and get checked against real tests, even coarse, sloppy descriptions are good enough. The structure does the work, not the eloquence.
And the gradient alignment machinery, which sounds expensive, you're estimating all these training directions, adds under 10% overhead per round. Most of it reuses work the validation gate already did, so the selectivity is close to free, and you make it back in data efficiency anyway.
Okay, Juniper, let me put the skeptic hat on properly, because there are a few places I'd push. The big one is that the validation set is doing a lot of quiet work. The entire definition of useful hangs on this small, held-out set of trusted problems. A task is good if its gradient lines up with the validation gradient. But that's the practice exam, and the authors deliberately built it to be stratified across languages and difficulty levels to look like the real benchmarks.
So you're worried that aligning to the practice exam is partly just teaching to the test?
That's exactly the worry. If your practice exam is built to resemble the real exam, then keep the problems that move me toward the practice exam is a sophisticated way of moving toward the evaluation distribution. The gains are real, but I'd want to see what happens if the validation set were drawn from a genuinely different distribution than the benchmarks. To their credit, the authors flag this. They say robustness may suffer if the validation set isn't representative. But they never run the experiment where they deliberately mismatch it. So we don't know how much of the 8 points survives if you break that resemblance.
that's the right place to press. Though in their defense, teaching toward the kind of problem you'll be evaluated on is sort of the legitimate goal of a curriculum. The question is whether it generalizes past that, and there's one result that hints it might. The skills they distilled from repository repair transferred to a completely different setting. Terminal tasks, like chaining commands and manipulating files. They picked up 4.5 points there too, on a benchmark they weren't training toward. That suggests the skills are capturing something more like general agentic behavior, not just benchmark-specific tricks.
That transfer result is the most exciting thing in the paper, and also the least nailed down. One model, one direction of transfer. But fine, it's a real signal. My second push is smaller, about framing. Starting from zero pre-existing tasks is doing rhetorical work. It's technically true. They don't start with a stockpile of bug fix problems. But they do need seed repositories, a distillation model, and that curated 100-problem validation set the whole reward depends on. That validation set is a hand-built, never-trained-on resource. So the data requirement is reduced, not eliminated. Zero is a little louder than what actually happened.
That's fair. And the 100 isn't arbitrary either. There's a sweet spot. 20 problems and the direction estimate is too noisy to be useful. It actually hurts. 100 stabilizes it. 200 barely helps. So the method genuinely leans on having a well-chosen 100-problem anchor. Modest requirement, but it's not nothing.
And then the honest ceiling, which the authors are candid about. They ran it out to 5 rounds. This method keeps climbing, 51.5, then flattens around 52. The strongest competitor flattens earlier and lower, around 48. So it saturates 2 rounds later and at a higher ceiling. But it does saturate, and the reason is baked in. It's a closed world. A fixed pool of seed repositories.
Which is the textbook with finite chapters problem. The self-targeting curriculum is great at finding your weak spots and drilling them, but it can only build problems out of the repositories it was handed. Eventually, it's covered every gap that pool can expose, and turning the crank produces nothing new. The authors are upfront that what they're measuring is curriculum behavior under a fixed repository distribution, not open-ended improvement.
And that's in real tension with the paper's most ambitious phrase, a scalable substrate for self-evolving agents. Scalable and runs out of road in 5 rounds don't sit easily together. The fix they flag as future work is obvious. Keep feeding it fresh repositories. But that's exactly the human-curated supply the framing implies you've escaped. You've made the supply problem much smaller. You haven't made it disappear.
There's one more I'd add, more technical. That whole, does this task's direction line up with the exams, check, rests on a one-step approximation. It's reasoning about a single nudge of the dials. Whether a single-step measurement reliably predicts the value of training on a problem over many, many steps is sort of asserted more than proven. The evidence that it's the right call is that cosine beats the difficulty-based alternatives, but the margin there is modest, a point and change. And all of this is one model family, at one size, a 9 billion parameter model. Whether the advantage holds for a much stronger base agent with fewer obvious gaps to target, nobody's shown yet.
Right. The advantage might shrink exactly when the agent gets good, which is the regime you care about most.
But step back from the caveats for a second, because the core idea is the thing to hold on to. The binding constraint on making coding agents better right now isn't compute, and it isn't model size. It's the supply of good, verifiable problems. And what this paper is really arguing is that the supply doesn't have to come from outside. The agent's own behavior, generated for free during training and normally deleted, can be recycled into a curriculum that targets itself. Even if it runs out of road in a closed world, that's a real shift in the economics.
And the deeper reframing, the one I think outlives this specific system, is the move away from difficulty as the organizing principle of a curriculum. The field's instinct has always been, give the learner harder problems. This paper says difficulty is a bad proxy. Plenty of hard problems are hard for reasons that don't transfer. Some obscure quirk the agent will never see again. The right question isn't how hard is this? It's, does practicing this measurably move me toward the goal? That's a cleaner question. And it's the kind of thing the field's been groping toward for a while.
There's something almost fitting about the name. The Socratic method is a teacher asking the questions that expose your specific gaps. And here, the teacher is the agent's own record of how it failed. The struggle becomes the syllabus.
That's the line I'll keep from this one. If you want to find it, the work comes out of Shanghai Jiao Tong and Alibaba, and it's worth the read.
The show notes have a link to the paper and some related reading if this caught you. And if you want the full transcript with every term defined in line, plus the way this connects to the other episodes we've done on training and curricula, that all lives on paperdive.ai.
Thanks for spending the time with us. This has been AI Papers, a deep dive.